Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 10:47 a.m. That is Pacific Summer Time. Today is June 12th. I thought that putting the spread up between HIBOR and LIBOR would be rather instructive, because over the last decade, the spread had spent much of the time around the zero bound, or within a band of about 20 basis points plus or minus zero. And then we had a rather explosive move in 2018 because of the USA, and HIBOR rates didn't really keep up. Now what we're seeing is an opposite divergence, where the LIBOR rate in the USA is contracting, and that's quite obvious because of people starting to think about the outlook for interest rates and the scope for an interest rate cut. But when we think about HIBOR, well, what's going on in Hong Kong is rather unsettling from a political front, but it is starting to have an effect on the outlook for interest rates. The HIBOR rate, therefore the risk in the banking sector, should be generally assumed to be reasonably similar to the LIBOR rate in the USA. But because of the political risk, we're starting to see HIBOR rates moving higher, despite the fact that there is the potential that the USA is going to cut interest rates, and that would have an effect on the Hong Kong dollar because it's pegged. So there is obviously some risk getting priced into Hong Kong right now. And when we look at the Hang Seng Index, it was down by about 500 points in here today, a little bit shy of that number. It hasn't quite unwound the rebound we saw 2 days ago, but it should be doing better than this, considering the scope for unwinding of a short-term oversold condition. So the absolute minimum it needs to do is to sustain a move back above the trend mean. The risk is, of course, that the protests in Hong Kong escalate and that there is a violent response. When we think about what's going on the mainland market, it was in mildly negative territory today, but did hold on to the big move that we saw yesterday. The biggest beneficiary of the supports that are coming in from the central government for the stock market are the banks and the consumer staples sectors, and the banking sector was in positive territory yesterday, held on to most of the decline, of the advance in here today. Now, when we think about what's going on in terms of Wall Street, well, the breadth in the market has been reasonable. And when then we think about what's going on in terms of the NASDAQ, well, we've had a really quite impressive rebound over the course of the last 6 days. Now we're getting some pause and consolidation. The size of the rebound and the upside key reversal, and so far at least upside follow through in here this week, is certainly something that we see that could potentially represent a low of near-term, if not medium-term, significance. But that doesn't mean that everything is going to rise. Obviously, there are going to be clear outperformers. Microsoft, for example, having pivoted to cloud computing, it was at a new all-time high earlier this week, and now is just consolidating that move. Visa, for example, with its impressive dividend growth, has been a go-to for investors, and it was at a new all-time high yesterday as well, despite the fact that these two shares are somewhat overextended. But it's in the kinds of companies that are heavily reliant on access to liquidity, like Netflix, where we're starting to see this rolling over characteristic. Now, the price was down another $5 in here today. It's back below that psychological $350 area. Every time it's dropped below this level, it has bounced. So it's going to have to do that again in order to continue to confirm that this is a range rather than a rolling top formation. The much bigger question is whether the top isn't already in. We've had the massive reaction against the prevailing trend. We're getting a period now of right-hand extension, which is often seen before we get an additional decline. So what happens with Netflix is obviously going to be of key importance. Then we have Tesla. And Tesla had pulled back violently and it bounced last week, and it was in negative territory in here today so far, but not in an especially dynamic manner, although that does look like a small downside key reversal. But that's assuming it's held throughout the session. The much bigger question is about the sustainability of the company's growth forecasts. Now, these two companies share one common characteristic in that they are heavily reliant on the good graces of lenders to afford them the credit they need in order to continue to try and expand their businesses and reach a potential point of profitability that's sustainable. I suspect that that's further off for Netflix than it is for Tesla. Tesla's the challenges, I think, are more about the production of cars to meet demand, and also, of course, to come up with new models. But Netflix has yet to demonstrate that it can continue to hold on to subscribers as it continues to raise prices and spends inordinate amounts of money producing average content. Then, of course, we have companies like Tesla, or sorry, Uber and Lyft. And when, for example, we think about Uber, well, it has been pulling back now for the last 5 days, and it is right in the region of this $42 area, which had been resistance between May and the beginning of June. It's an area where, if support is going to be found, then we could anticipate that this might be where it could happen. But the other thing, of course, is that Uber is a long way from profitability. And so is Lyft. Lyft has been ranging now below $65 for the last month. These are companies that have got some serious questions to answer about their runway to profitability, which is progressively further in the future based on their valuations. Then, of course, we have the incredible advance seen in the last few days in Beyond Meat. And it pulled back yesterday, having just about doubled in the course of the last month. But it was in stronger territory in here today with Tim Hortons in Canada rolling out its products, and that was not in its earnings announcement a couple of days ago, although it was widely expected to be announced. So this is a company that has got ample growth ahead of it. So it wasn't another example of these companies that had got most of their growth behind them before they got to IPO. That is perhaps the biggest challenge that we have right now, is that we have companies that have been private for so long that they're coming to the market at extraordinarily high valuations relative to their potential for growth in future, and the profitability metric that is attached to those very ambitious growth forecasts. What that suggests is that we're going to get a much more parsing of the outlook for some of these highly indebted companies. And I do believe that that is where the potential for bubbly activity is likely to come from. Well, when we think about the market for Wall Street, I find it quite interesting that we're starting to see a market appear in bullish and bearish forecasts. Some people are willing to continue to hold on to the view that the peak in the market was back in January of last year. There are others saying that it is likely we're going to see an upward break. Well, the upward break argument was certainly given a boost by the big upward dynamic we saw last week, but we're going to need to see some form of additional new liquidity hitting the market in order to really spur investment demand once more. Well, what happens in terms of China and their willingness to continue to run deficits is going to be important, but they are certainly continuing to support the renminbi. Then we have what's likely to happen in terms of the dollar. The dollar was steadier in here today, and that's meaningful considering that it is right in the region of the trend mean. This is a natural area where we could anticipate some steadying If we get a sustained move below the trend mean, well, then that is going to break this uptrend. And certainly there has been a considerable loss of momentum in terms of the performance of the dollar index since the Federal Reserve started to reduce the size of its balance sheet. In fact, the dollar's strength dates almost exactly from the point where the size of the balance sheet started to come down in a more dynamic manner. The contraction in supply of dollars created a supply and elasticity market for the dollar. Therefore, the end of quantitative tightening will erase that supply and elasticity argument. That, I think, is important, particularly in the government bond markets, because what we continue to see is that government bond yields have been contracting. There are still questions about the Italian government's relationship with the EU and the status of any potential fines, despite the fact that the breaking of the fiscal rule was relatively small, particularly relative to the size of the USA's deficits. But we've seen contraction in government bond yields right across the developed markets, but it's also been a factor in the emerging markets. And Indian yields have contracted from 8.25% to 7% over the course of the last 9 months. Now, there is scope here for the overbought condition to be unwound, but the much more important ingredient for continued performance in terms of emerging markets is going to be their currencies. The Indian rupee has been really quite steady, and that is certainly a point in its favor from bond investors' perspective against a background where there is a clear competition for yield. Then, when we think about, for example, South Africa, where interest rates are still quite high, well, the weakness of the rand and the potential for additional weakness is obviously something that is going to inhibit foreign investors from participating in its bond markets. Therefore, we're going to see a parsing again. This is another example of where just an outright bet is unlikely to deliver the kinds of results that people want. That addressing markets on their individual merits is potentially going to be where the clearest source of outperformance over coming months and years is likely to be. Then, when we think about what's going on in Brazil, they are continuing to push through on reform of the pension system, and that is a thorny subject in any country. But the Bovespa index is coming right back up to the upper side of the range that's persisted over the last year, and that does look like a continued bull market. At the same time, the Brazilian real, which had been trading below or weaker than the four level up to a month ago, has rallied really quite impressively. Now it's right in the region of the trend mean. So there is a short-term overbought condition, but it has clearly broken the dollar's uptrend. And if it strengthens further from here, then we can start to talk about more than a short-term low for the real. And again, that is the kind of change in the perception for the outlook for the currency that can have a considerable effect on the stock market from a foreign investor's perspective. So it's, I think, another example of where you have comparative advantages in terms of yields, and the green light will be if the dollar does in fact break its downtrend, or excuse me, its uptrend. Now, gold prices were in positive territory today. We continue to see a little consolidation in the region of this $1,350 area. I do suspect that it's going to be a sustained move above the $1,350 area that's going to be required to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. This looks like a 6-year base formation, and this has been a reasonably orderly consolidation above the trend mean and just below the breakout point. So I think it looks increasingly likely that if we see the dollar breaking its uptrend, gold is going to break out. That is also an important characteristic for Bitcoin. And the price today was up another $225. It's back above the 8,000 level. This looks like another reasonably orderly consolidation, particularly following what was an explosive breakout in May. So I think the gold price and Bitcoin are rather reliant on the trading around the dollar. But the other market that is important in terms of global liquidity is oil, and it was down another $1.50 in here today. Now, I think there's a rather interesting graphic. I'm going to post it in Comment of the Day today, but it gives us a really good perspective on just how much oil the USA has brought to the market since 2007. Sorry, since two, excuse me. In here we have 2017. 2017 is only 2 years ago, and there is an anticipation that by 2030, the USA is going to be pumping an additional 15 million barrels a day. That's on top of already being the largest producer. Well, if you want an argument for a secular bear market in terms of the oil price, then that is going to be, I think, a very significant factor. When we look at the longer term chart, it looks increasingly likely that the upper side of this range is plus or minus 80, about $5 either side of the $80 area, and the lower side is going to be plus or minus $5 around the $40 area. Well, the lower oil prices go, the greater the boost that represents for the global economy. But the much bigger picture is that with the USA having turned from being the biggest consumer in the world to being the biggest producer, then that is a massive upset to global status quo. And it puts the USA in direct competition for Russia's lifeblood. The USA is not dependent on energy exports. It can be rather judicious on who it decides to sell energy to. Russia is totally dependent on its exports of commodities, and most particularly oil and gas. Well, that puts the USA and Russia on a direct trajectory towards conflict, not least in terms of competition for major markets. And one of those is China. The fact that Russian vessels were willing to almost ram US vessels in the South China Sea just earlier this week is a clear example of the increasing competition for the Chinese market in energy that is arising between the two nations. And that is likely to represent a really rather significant risk. So when we think about the risk premia that are arising as a result of these massive changes that are occurring in the global status quo, then energy is one of the linchpins in that argument. It's not just about the rise of populism, but it's about the game-changing long-term effects of the biggest consumer turning into one of the biggest producers of a vital global commodity. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.